Saga Egmont presents The Langston Harbour Murders by Pauline Rowson, read by Colin Mace. Note to the listener. Please note, this book is set in the early 2000s, when technology was somewhat different. Chapter 1. Friday, 5:45 a.m.
Thought you might like this, Sergeant Cantelli said, placing a brown plastic beaker on Horton's desk. Horton stared at the frothy liquid that resembled dirty washing-up water and said, "Are you trying to poison me?"
"It might help keep you awake."
"Doesn't seem to be doing the trick with you." Horton thought Cantelli looked like something they'd exhumed from Milton Cemetery. "Sit down before you fall down."
"My bones ache. My head's thumping. And I think I've caught a cold."
Cantelli sneezed just to prove it.
"That's about all we did catch," Horton replied with bitterness.
All they had to show for over 90 minutes of surveillance, crouched in a fishing boat at Portsmouth's town Camber in the pouring rain, was a bag full of stolen antiques and Mickey Johnson, who had conveniently lost his voice.
"Any joy finding out who Johnson's victims are?" Horton asked, spinning round in his chair and plucking both his socks and trainers off the radiator where he had left them to dry.
"Nothing. We won't know who he's turned over until they report it, or Mickey decides to confide in us." "I could wring his scrawny neck."
Horton slipped on his trainers and straightened up with a groan. Cantelli wasn't the only one whose bones were protesting.
"What about the boat?"
"It certainly wasn't Johnson's, unless Social Security benefit had just got a hell of a lot better. If it hadn't been for that blessed drunk stumbling onto it by mistake, then Horton would have caught both of their antique thieves and not just Johnson." He recalled with a stab of shame how he'd been poleaxed with cramp while chasing Johnson's young accomplice across the Cathedral Green. He'd given Uniform a description, but it wasn't much to go on. It had been too dark, and the lad had been wearing a hoodie. Cantelli said,
"There was nothing on it to give us an ID. Sergeant Elkins says he'll try the town Camber offices when they're open.
What bugs me is that antiques aren't usually Mickey's thing. DVDs, televisions, computers, jewellery and money, yes, but paintings?
Mickey couldn't tell a valuable painting from a picture postcard, and yet he stole some by William Wiley on that first job. Perhaps the runaway youth is the brains behind the operation,"
Cantelli ventured, yawning widely. Somehow, Horton couldn't see it. Pulling his sailing jacket off the radiator and draping it over the coat stand next to his leather biker jacket, he said, "What else has come in?" Clearly, with an effort, Cantelli stirred himself to reply.
"There's been a break-in at the X-Forces Club in Lamport, and another at the Sir Wilberforce Cutler School. The steward at the club went to accident and emergency, but it was just a surface head wound. Some cigarettes and booze were stolen."
"And the school?"
"Building material.
I'll send someone round in the morning."
It was morning, almost 6 o'clock. He was ready for his bed, and Cantelli looked as though he was about to fall asleep in the chair. He told Cantelli to get off home. He would do the same after putting the finishing touches to his report. But he had hardly got started when his phone rang. It was Sergeant Elkins of the Marine Unit.
"The Langston Harbour Master's just radioed us, Inspector. A fisherman has reported seeing something on the Mulberry and thinks we should take a look."
For a moment, Horton couldn't think what the Mulberry was. Then his brain clicked into gear. He recalled that it had started life in the Second World War when it had been built as part of a floating harbour for the D-Day landings. Whilst it was being towed out of Langston Harbour, it had developed a fatal crack and was now listed on the charts as a concrete structure nestling on the edge of Sinar Sands. Horton frowned, puzzled. Elkins was quite capable of investigating this himself, so why call him?
"Any idea what it is?"
He was thinking of bed and a long sleep.
"No, but Ray was very insistent that I call you."
Horton sat up at that. He'd known the harbour master for several years. Ray Tomsett was a practical man, not given to flights of fancy or hysterics.